think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 200th episode of Low Limit Football on this 23rd of April, 2018, on the All In Sports Talk Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we will look back on the Copa del Rey final where the legends came to play. We check out the race in Italy as the top two teams squared off this week. Did Juve seal their seventh consecutive Scudetto, or did Napoli spoil the party? We'll look at that PFA Player of the Year award. Was it Mo Salah, Kevin De Bruyne, or maybe a mystery winner? And we'll check in on Arsenal, where the vast majority of their fans had their prayers answered this week. We're going to do all that and more as we celebrate our 200th episode with our very special guest, Mr. Tim Vickery, joining us tonight. First and foremost, let me bring in my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How's it going, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. 200 episodes. Unbelievable. And to think that we've been doing this for 4 years, it's an incredible achievement.
4.5 years. We're going to be celebrating 5 years in September.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Thank you for making me feel old.
So, no, it's been one heck of a run. And you know, we've had some great hosts on the show. Obviously, you, you know, Mike Orr, you know, and oh, my God, Ben the Machine. Where we originally started. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a heck of a ride. Some ups and downs, but definitely enjoying it along the way. And we get to talk about soccer. So, you know, it can't be all that bad, right?
And definitely, especially now that we have this guest that we've definitely had for all around the years, I would say, yeah. Countless times.
You know, we're very lucky because normally we reserve this person for our special occasions like our anniversary shows. And I guess our 200th episode will qualify. Mr. Tim Vickery joining us from Rio de Janeiro. Tim, how are you tonight?
Yeah, very well. I'm a little bit, I'm in the middle of a house move at the moment. And it's a bit like if you haven't played football or soccer for a while and you play, you know, the next morning you're just aching in parts of your body you never even knew that you had. I think I'm going to be a little bit like that tomorrow because of the house move. Anyway, congratulations on your 200 and for some sterling work down the years. I wonder when, all those years back when you first started, was the family name still Uccello? Has it been anglicized?
It was funny because I was interviewed on BN Sports up here in the United States, and they called me Uccello, and everybody in, like you said, anglicized my name of Uccello. And Matteo Benetti made it a point to say, no, it's Uccello, like a bird. It was like, and my father watched the episode where Matteo was talking about, you know, my name, and he got such a kick out of it because my father's from Italy, he was born there. And, you know, so just it's fun to see there, but my name's been butchered so many times over the years, so many different ways. It's incredible.
I second that as well.
Yep, that's right. You'll get it every once in a while yourself. So, but let's talk about football tonight, and let's look at the Champions League. Obviously, coming up this week with the Tuesday matchup with Roma Liverpool. Wednesday's the big one with Real Madrid Bayern Munich. Both of the, you know, most of the teams walked their way through. Obviously, dramatic fashion for Roma getting there. Liverpool was in control all the way, getting to this point in the tournament. Bayern looked like they were pretty much in control, although it was a scoreline was squeaky against against Sevilla in the quarterfinals. And we all know about the controversy between Juve and Real Madrid in their second leg. You know, battling the comeback, and then Real Madrid gets the late goal to move on. I want to look at Roma-Liverpool first because I think this is an intriguing matchup. This is, it almost feels like UEFA wanted a David versus Goliath kind of sense in the fact that one of the quote-unquote smaller teams in Liverpool or Roma are going to make it to the final. How do you rate the chances of either side, especially given the form that both teams are on, where they're really winning big games week after week now?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this one. I'm probably the only one here old enough to remember the final between these two sides in 84, and it was a terrific game between two really, really good sides. I hope we get something similar. The thing that intrigues me about Roma is how can a side with Fazione in the defence not concede goals, enabling them to get to win these big matches? I keep expecting him to get found out. I mean, he's so slow, Fazio. That's a matchup that intrigues me in that game. The pace of the Liverpool front three against the lack of pace of Fazio. And Roma obviously protects him. They protect him very, very well. But there must be times when Liverpool, being able to open up the pitch with their front three and really stretch the Roma defence, there must surely be times when they'll be able to isolate Fazio and take advantage of his lack of speed.
You know,
and certain,
I'm sorry, no, go ahead, Joe. I want to cut in because I did have a follow up question. When you say they protect Fazio in the back line, you feel that's more on somebody like Manolas doing that? Do you feel it's the midfield, like guys like Strootman, maybe Nainggolan in front of him? Or do you think it's even all the way back to Alisson?
Yeah, but I think a lot, sometimes with the fullbacks and the fullbacks covering behind, and sometimes you see, say the goals that Roma scored, that Roma conceded against Barcelona in that first leg, you look at them and you don't see Fazio in the picture. No, he's not there. Someone else is having to do the defending when the line is breached, when the opposition are able to get behind them. So it's clearly a defensive system which has been working, and the goalkeeper keeps coming up big, doesn't he? And he's really made his name in European club football this year, Alisson. He spent the whole last season on the bench. Brazil still kept faith with him, and I think this season you're seeing why. But it's the biggest game of his career so far, or the biggest two games in his career so far coming up now.
And, you know, Tim, obviously we're going to mention Liverpool real quick, because obviously it's been a really roller coaster ride for this team, you know, selling off a really important player in January, like Philippe Coutinho, who went to Barcelona. And, you know, many people want to talk about the Mohamed Salah show and his performances, you know, 41 goals, you know, the most goals ever scored in a Premier League campaign. But there's one player that I'm sure you're definitely familiar of that's really been even blossoming even better, maybe even to the extent of Salah, and that's Roberto Firmino. You know, heading into this big game against Roma, obviously it's a battle between that striker and his compatriot and his teammate on the national team, and Alisson Becker. So, Tim, I mean, real quick, you know, do you feel that this game would be extremely pivotal for not only for, obviously, Liverpool's chances of reaching a European final, but also for him to be that starting striker? Because obviously it's been a debate for the last few months between him and Gabriel Jesus of Manchester City to see who you feel is the starting striker for Brazil heading into this World Cup. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as far as Brazil are concerned, there's no debate whatsoever. It's Gabriel Jesus, and he scored 9 in 15, and he's got crunch goals, and he's way out in front. So, and Firmino has come in for a lot of criticism from, especially from former players, because I don't really know him. Now, remember, he didn't play first division football in Brazil, and he developed in a relatively small club in Germany before coming to England. And his performances for Brazil, as the coach Chichi says, have not been entirely convincing. There's a feeling that there's still something more from him. So this is a huge game for Firmino, because it's a chance for him to show himself in the collective atmosphere where he's functioning very well, back to his home audience in Brazil. who will be watching the game. So it's big for him. But I think unless there's an injury, we go into the World Cup with Brazil lining Gabriel Jesus and with Firmino on the bench. Now, the World Cup is always like time speeded up. You know, teams suddenly come together, teams suddenly fall apart. People who weren't originally in the starting lineup suddenly become big stars. Remember Scilacci in 1990. So just because Gabriel Jesus will start doesn't mean that Gabriel Jesus will finish. But as it stands, that is the pecking order. Gabriel Jesus a long, long way ahead of Firmino, but Firmino has a chance to make his claim in front of a huge audience, a worldwide audience, and specifically a Brazilian audience when they face Roma.
Do you feel that this probably is the better thing to do? Because obviously, you know, you like to talk about how, you know, the Premier League and especially English clubs as a whole in different competitions, you know, tend to, you know, not as perform as constantly as well in heading into big tournaments. You know, do you feel that this is the advantage for a player like Gabriel Jesus, who is not in any European competitions anymore and already wrapped up the Premier League?
Well, perhaps. I would certainly think that way, were it not for the injuries that he's suffered over the last kind of year and a half. I think in his case, having more game time, scoring more goals and acquiring more confidence would do him no harm whatsoever. So, you know, I really don't think that if City were still involved in the Champions League and if they still had to scrap for points in the Premier League, I don't think that Gabriel Jesus has played enough football to be in danger of suffering end-of-season burnout, which I think has been the blight of recent World Cups. And I really hope it doesn't strike the big stars. And obviously on that, where I think the big winner for the World Cup was Roma eliminating Barcelona. And the fact that, you know, Messi has now had three seasons when the Champions League for Barcelona hasn't gone beyond the quarterfinals.
No, definitely. So obviously heading into this next big match in the Champions League, it's Bayern Munich against Real Madrid. You know, many people want to point this out as a final, really, but it would be unfortunate to see one of these teams out. Obviously, you know, with South American experience, Real Madrid have a ton of it, you know, with players such as Marcelo, Casemiro, you know, and you look at Bayern with players such as James Rodriguez and Rafinha and of course, Arturo Vidal. So, you know, heading into this game real quick, who do you think is at a better advantage, especially given the different circumstances that they entered to go into the semifinal?
Yeah, Bayern have been my title favourites for some time now. I think it's been quite a strange year, really, because so many of the big teams, the really big teams, I've been looking at them thinking, I think you were better last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago even. Now, from the point of view of a Tottenham fan, very frustrating, actually, because, you know, I thought that in terms purely of football, I thought Tottenham were almost incredibly superior to Juventus, but you didn't have the game smarts and the experience. I've seen Real Madrid far better as well. And they've had a laboured season in some ways. And so I've been watching that, you know, through the development of the Champions League, thinking, well, Barcelona look like they're in decline. Real Madrid look like they're in decline. Juventus look like they're in decline. The team that maybe isn't in decline is Bayern, and they fly a little bit under the radar screen because you know, you don't have to pay a great deal of attention to the Bundesliga because it's so easy for them to win it, and perhaps they don't have quite the glamour of a Real or a Barcelona or even a City and perhaps a Liverpool. I don't know, even though they are giants year after year after year, but I see them as favourites not only for this for the clash against Real Madrid, but also to win the title.
No, absolutely. And Joe, I mean, I'll pose that same question to you. I mean, how do you view this game moving forward?
I think I want to echo what Tim said, is that, you know, Bayern Munich has really flown under the radar, you know, all season. They've won the Bundesliga. They're on pace to win the Pokal in the next few weeks. And you're looking at a situation that they're in line to win a treble. Real Madrid has a very tall task here to play a very well-organized Bayern Munich side, but they're certainly the team that can do it. Knocking off a Juventus side that was also very well-organized, you know, although, you know, in the first leg it didn't appear quite as much like that. I think the key to this matchup and the key to the run to the finish line for both of these teams, and really all of these theme, all of these teams, when you think about it, is that this is really the only competition that's left for them. Now, Bayern does have the Pokal, but that's usually a pretty easy path. This is really the only trophy all four of these teams are playing for at this point. Real is not going to win La Liga. They obviously can't win the Copa del Rey. Barcelona did that this weekend. Roma is not going to win the Scudetto. They are out of Coppa Italia. Liverpool, obviously City's already won the title there, so that's a done deal. And they're out of the FA Cup. So, you know, the key here is that all four of these teams are focused on this one competition. And in most instances, it's the only silverware they can win this year, which I think makes it a little tougher for Bayern, because Real Madrid is going to have all their eggs in this Champions League basket for me.
Definitely. It's a tough task for all four of these teams. It's going to be very interesting to see how they'll be able to handle that pressure. And especially, you know, with a team like Bayern, who are obviously fighting for three titles this season compared to the other teams that are just fighting for just one. And just switching gears real quick, heading into the World Cup. Obviously, you know, we had our conversation last week with Roy Neymar regarding the Argentina squad that reportedly has already been made, the 35 provisional squad. Obviously, we've seen the news that Jorge Sampaoli will be heading to Europe to basically go on his European tour and talk to the various players who did get called up. You know, and of course, according to these reports, you know, he is visiting one player that did not make this list, and that's Mauro Icardi. You know, many people are really skeptical. I think many people who really aren't familiar with the Argentina squad that focused is really skeptical of thinking about how a player who is constantly dominating all of Serie A with Inter for the last few seasons is not getting called up to the Argentina squad. And, you know, there have been also rumors of him being left off alongside Paulo Dybala, you know, a player who definitely did not have a good weekend against Napoli. And of course, you know, the player that we've always been, you know, are looking forward to watching, and really a name that's probably foreign to European audience, and that's Lautaro Martinez of Racing. So, Tim, I just want your thoughts on this whole, I guess, debate regarding this embarrassment of riches that Sampaoli has to deal with heading into the World Cup.
Yeah, and I think the meeting that he has with Messi is going to be very, very important. I think this is the first time that Messi will really, really wield massive power in terms of who gets selected. It makes total sense for Messi to have a huge say in selection, a bigger say than he had 4 years ago going to Brazil. And I think Messi, if he's allowed his head, he would want Aguero, his old mate Aguero, to be the centre forward. Now, obviously, the big question mark which is hanging here is what kind of physical state is Aguero going to be in? It looks as if Higuain is number two. How many centre forwards do you want to take? If you have doubts about Aguero, do you want to take a third one as well? Icardi, the people who've raved about, who've not understood his exclusion from Argentina squads, obviously didn't watch World Cup qualifying. Martinez is very, very promising, but it is a step up. And the word from the Argentina camp is that, and he was called up for the friendlies, the recent friendlies against Italy and Spain. He got on briefly against Spain. But the word from the Argentina camp is that he was bad in training. That he felt that step up in training. Obviously, Sampaoli has seen this and has digested this. It might come down to a one or the other situation if he wants to take three centre forwards. But it's a lovely problem to have. You know, if only he could have the same embarrassment of riches at centre back, at full back, and at goal in goal. Then maybe we wouldn't be quite so worried about what might happen with Argentina in this World Cup.
No doubt. You know, one question I do have, just thinking about what you had said about Messi dictating who's going to be on this team, kind of, you know, the player selector, really more so than Sampaoli. Does Messi dictate formation too? So in essence, what I'm asking is, do you feel like Messi is just as much the coach of this team as he is the star player at this point?
Well, I think he could be. In these meetings that they're having. The reason for that is that everything that Sampaoli has done so far hasn't worked. You know, Sampaoli, it was the big question. It was the obvious question as soon as he came in as Argentina coach. You know, he has a method of play which is your half of the field, ultra press, ultra dynamic, try and create two against one situations down the flanks, and throw a lot of men forward. And the obvious question was, you know, do Argentina have the defensive resources to play this way? Because it's a risky way of playing if you can't press well and if your defense are slow. So, you know, he started off with his back three. The back three absolutely collapsed in the game against Nigeria in November, a game which took on extra importance after Argentina got drawn against Nigeria in the group. And, you know, it collapsed for very obvious reasons. First of all, the midfield wasn't pressing. Second, there's no pace in the back three, so they keep retreating. Thirdly, he hasn't really got good wing back, so he was using wingers. He's expecting them to run back 80 metres and defend at the end of it. And none of those three things were working. So abandon the back three, goes with a more orthodox back four, brings in two new centre, new fullbacks, Bustos and Tagliafico. Looks like he's got the steadier option of Mercado of Sevilla at right back if he wants it. But anyway, that's what he did for the friendlies in March. And, you know, with a high line and a back four, and look what happened against Spain. They just got walked through. So you kind of get the feeling that they're back to square one. You know, they have to, you know, Sampaoli, because nothing's worked. So you might as well sit down with Messi and think, well, what's going to work? Because I can't think of too many sides who've ever been as dependent on one player as Argentina have become on Messi. And without Messi, they wouldn't have qualified. There's no doubt about that. You know, he missed eight rounds of qualification. They picked up 7 points. You multiply that through 18 rounds, and Argentina don't qualify. Don't get in near to qualification. Now, when he played in 10. They picked up 21 points. That's a reasonable ratio of points that gets you qualified. I think he scored 7 or 8 goals. No one else scored more than 2. So the dependence on him is almost absurd. So it makes sense for Sampaoli and Messi to sit down and think not only what personnel, but what structure of team is best to get the better out of him.
Right. Yeah, and I think therein lies the rub, though, because from my understanding of the relationships, he's very close to Maxi Lopez, and that's where the rub comes with Mauro Icardi. So, we, you know, if Messi is the dictator of formation, player selection, and that sort of thing, I think you're almost assured Mauro Icardi doesn't make the team, no, regardless of the health situation of someone like Sergio Aguero, I think.
Yeah, perhaps. And there's also the thing, like, you know, only two people have scored more goals for Argentina than Aguero. I know he's had a bad time in the qualification tournament, but then who didn't for Argentina? And Higuain is a victim of mischances in finals, but has been a consistent goal scorer for Argentina. Icardi hasn't. You know, he came into the side. He was Sampaoli's first choice at centre forward. Came into the side and didn't add anything. You could perhaps argue that he added a little bit more than Dybala, who was really awful. You know, football—it's not a beauty contest. It's not a case of picking the 11 most pretty faces, and then you've got a team. You know, you've got to get some kind of blend. If Icardi for whatever reason doesn't fit in, why give him a chance over the likes of Aguero and Higuain, who have scored goals for Argentina, which Icardi hasn't done and didn't look like doing in World Cup qualification.
Right. I do want to close out with one more question, and I want to go back across the pond to England and talk about Arsene Wenger, obviously announcing that he will be out at the end of the season to the glee of many of Arsenal's supporters around the world. I'd like your reflections on him in terms of, do we remember Arsene Wenger for the last 5 or 6 years that were subpar by Arsenal standards, or do we remember him as the Invincibles coach and an innovator that came into Arsenal from France?
I think we remember him as the man who changed the club, and it's not easy to change the identity of a club with as much history and as much tradition as Arsenal. Now, if you're starting a new club, you've got a blank canvas there to create your identity. But Arsenal will be, you know, years and years and years. And perhaps there's a younger generation who may be don't realize what Arsenal used to symbolize. They've always been a big team, but there was a certain doggedness about them. I mean, they took, you know, I've seen Arsenal games going back nearly 50 years, and the supporters would go to the stadium cheering the names of the fullbacks or the centre backs. It's a perverse way of watching football, quite frankly, but they just loved. They loved so much. They took so much pleasure from dull 1-0 wins. And they're not like that anymore. You know, they're a completely different club with a different ethic. And perhaps it would have been better had he gone a few years ago, because that the contrast between what they were and what they are now. And now, I do wonder whether the move of stadium, how much that altered the priorities of the people who have a stake in the club. I wonder if over time Arsenal have become more of a business than a football club, because football clubs as businesses are very, very strange businesses. The objective is not profit. The objective is titles. And so you spend every last bit of money you got in on improving your playing resources and so on in the search for titles, not in the search for profit. I just wonder, with the move to the very, very impressive new stadium, I wonder over time if some of those involved have been perhaps had more of an eye on the profit than they have on the titles. And, you know, while they've been selling their season tickets at very, very high prices, they've been quite happy. So if that's the case, and I'm a long, long way away, it's just a suspicion of mine that Arsenal over recent years have given a lot of priority to the business rather than chasing titles. If that's true, then it's a little bit hard that Arsene Wenger gets all the blame for that.
Now, one more question before we let you go. One of the rumored replacements for him is his opponent this week in the Europa League, in Diego Simeone. Do you think Diego Simeone takes that job moving over from Atleti next year, or do you think it's one of the other rumored names like Luis Enrique? We've even seen Patrick Vieira coming out of NYCFC as some of the names that have been mentioned, Brendan Rodgers as well. Do you think it's Cholo, or do you think it's somebody else?
I don't think it should be Simeone. I admire greatly. I always thought it was a great shame, actually, that Simeone didn't go and play in England, because I think the fans would have loved him. They would have really loved him, especially the fans of the team that he was playing for. He'd have been a villain for other fans, and he'd have relished that. But I think that Simeone would represent a backward step in terms of that change of identity that I've just been talking about. And Wenger has rebranded them as an exciting club, one that hasn't lived up to expectations over the last few years. But the old Arsenal, you didn't have any great expectations of excitement. And Simeone is a warrior. I think the fit of Simeone would be better at Chelsea, perhaps, than it would be at a new post-Wenger Arsenal, who I think should be looking for a more expansive coach than a cover-up and counter-attack coach like Simeone.
I agree. No doubt about it. Tim, I want to thank you for joining us on our 200th episode tonight. We always enjoy having you on the show, and we look forward to speaking with you again very, very soon.
Look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks.
The dulcet tones of the Legendino. Always great to catch up with Tim and, chat a little footy for a while. Rob, let me get you a trivia question, man, because we didn't do that yet. Right?
No, we didn't.
So, my trivia question is Copa del Rey centric.
All right.
So, Vincenzo Montella this weekend, definitely the hard luck loser. I don't know if he's been sacked yet. I know there was rumors that he might have been sacked today. But Vincenzo Montella was the third Italian coach to coach in a Copa del Rey final. Can you name the other two? And can you name who they coached in those finals?
Well, one definitely sticks out because it wasn't so long ago.
Right. The other one's tougher.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think for. Yeah, it's a good question.
All right,
I'll definitely have to think about that.
We'll get you an answer in a little bit. Let's jump into opening thoughts, and I kind of alluded to it a little bit there with Tim before we let him go. It's Arsene Wenger. Arsene Wenger obviously announcing this week that This season will be his last at the club, at Arsenal. Place that he spent, I want to say, Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, 22 years?
That's right, 1996.
So just an incredible run. That's something we don't see anymore in coaching, period, end of story, any sport. You just don't see that type of longevity. You maybe see it in college basketball a little bit, but at that point, the coaches in that instance are legends. You know, Mike Krzyzewski, Jim Boeheim. Those are the names.
Greg Popovich of Spurs of San Antonio.
Of San Antonio, right. Those are there's so few and far in between that Wenger becomes an exception, not a rule. I thought it was fitting to ask the question of Tim about what will his legacy be, because many will look at the last 5 or 6 years and say the guy's a disaster, and he was too rigid and he didn't want to change and he didn't want to step aside when he should have. Many think that this 2-year contract that he signed last year was the one that he shouldn't have signed. He should have walked away then. I also look back, and say, okay, well, which Arsene Wenger will we remember? Because I think the one we should remember is the great coach that coached all the great Arsenal teams and won all the titles. Hopefully the lack of leaving early does not tarnish his legacy. I want to throw it over to you, and then we can talk about who's possibly going to replace him, coming up next.
Yeah, I mean, I think many people tend to forget that this great manager, Le Professeur, as his nickname is called, the teacher. He really revolutionized not just Arsenal Football Club as a whole, but really revolutionized football in England in general. I mean, he was an innovator of introducing changes in training and diet that hasn't been seen in a long, long time. Obviously a very focused on detailed coach. It was a bit maybe off or not to the current state of other coaches that we've seen in the past, in the recent years, I would say. But his approach to different mentalities, especially attacking, and of course what Tim said, entertaining, because that's what we want to remember this Arsenal team as, especially under Wenger. Just going back real quick at his honors for this club. While being at Arsenal, three Premier Leagues. Obviously, the most famous one was the 2003-2004 season, where they finished unbeaten. 7 FA Cups, 7 Community Shields. It's really a test of one of the greatest managers ever to really manage in England. I mean, it could have been done in a more earlier sense. Maybe like you said, Joe, I think he should have done that before signing that that 2-year contract. I think many people want to view this as maybe 4 or 5 years too late. I think when he won that FA Cup in 2014, after 9 years of not winning a single trophy, I think that would have been the end, I would say, of Arsene Wenger at Arsenal. But we have to remember this guy, revolutionized Arsenal as a whole, and I think it's going to be a big void to fill. We want to talk about Sir Alex Ferguson and the legacy, and obviously Wenger and Ferguson are two different situations and two different forms of success. I mean, Ferguson's obviously been much more successful than Wenger in the same time period, but it's going to be a big void to see who's going to replace such a legend of Arsenal and English football as a whole. We don't want to, we would hope that the similar situation won't happen to a David Moyes that was able to succeed such a big an emblem of the club like Sir Alex Ferguson. But this is going to be a tough challenge now for Arsenal to be able to, find a manager that really suits the mold of what Arsenal is. And it won't be changed. I think we'll never see such a thing. Definitely not a manager that has been able to stay for a long, long time. You mentioned 22 years managing the same club. We talk about the what have you done for me lately, and Wenger should be the exception, not the rule, because of that. But it's going to be really tough moving forward for Arsenal, and I think how we remember him, we need to remember him for not just the monumental achievements that he did and the way that he revolutionized football for England as a whole, English football, and Arsenal as well. We don't want to also forget the so-called bitterness of fans and people wanting to call for his head within the last 4 or 5 years, because, you know, it was that idea of stubbornness that many people really like Wenger for, and, you know, the Wenger in, Wenger out crowd, that kind of thing. But, you know, we still need to recognize this man as one of the greatest managers of all time, I would say.
Well, you bring me to my next question, which I'm glad, because this makes it an easy question to ask now. If you recall back, Wenger said that he was going to see out his contract. He was going to complete his contract, which currently still has another year on it. So this announcement does come a little bit out of left field when it comes from Wenger himself. So the question is, was Wenger sacked? And the reason I say that is, you know, there are three options here. Either A, he was sacked and decided to fall on his sword. B, he truly decided this was best for the club and is stepping away totally on his own, which would go against what he said in the media, you know, previously. Or was this a mutual thing where Arsenal brass basically came to him and said, listen, we're sacking you at the end of the season. So you can either go out on your own sword and announce that you're stepping down, or we're just going to sack you, which is kind of unceremonious for a legend.
Exactly. Yeah, I would say that isn't the case. I think he definitely left on his own, just because of the power and you know the symbol that he is at Arsenal. I think he was able to find that agreement and said, you know what, you know, I've done what I need to do. I'm perhaps tired of the criticism, and you know, many people want to, you know, really praise Wenger. It's his professionalism more than anything, comparable to different managers. I think his professionalism is really top. Up there of English football managers. He's definitely doing this on his own, and I think it's his own decision that he was able to do this. But, you know, we have to see what happens here, because obviously, you know, he could either leave with his head up, which could mean capture a European title, something that he's never done at this club. He's been to a Europa League final and lost. He's been to a Champions League final and lost. So what fitting way would it be to leave with your head high, you know, despite all the criticisms that you've gotten in recent years, by capturing a title that Arsenal has never won in their history.
Mm-hmm. Now let's look at the who's who of guests or competitors for the Arsenal job here. And Rob, I want to go through them quickly just because I wanted to move on with the show. But there are some serious names. The first one at the top, and this list is from The Guardian, Max Allegri over at Juventus, 8-1 odds to take over the job. Rob, I don't see it happening. I don't see Allegri leaving Juventus. Now, I do see Allegri being sacked at Juventus, given their recent performances, you know, this weekend notwithstanding. But I don't see Max Allegri actually physically leaving to take over this Arsenal job. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I think he would have to be like forcibly removed from this club in order to take a decision to go to Arsenal. I mean, obviously, you know, Allegri is still in a really, you know, kind of, you know, and this is going into your wheelhouse, show, kind of still in hot water, because you're looking at a manager who, you know, is still could indeed finish the season without a title. You know, Napoli could catch up to Juventus. You know, we don't know what that final will be in the Coppa Italia, and they're obviously out of the Champions League. So this is really an untiming coincidence for a manager like Allegri.
Yeah, this weekend's match, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, is nothing short of a disaster for them. Next up, Carlo Ancelotti, 9-2 odds to take over the manager spot. I don't know why, but I don't see Ancelotti doing that. You know, I think he's done his thing in England, and I don't think he really cares to go back. That's just a personal feeling. I think if anything, he might step in somewhere in Italy, maybe even in Juventus if Max is out. But we'll have to see. But I don't see Ancelotti taking that.
No, me either. I think many people, and of course, we're going to be heading into this real quick. I think the similarity and style of Ancelotti and Wenger is definitely something that many Arsenal fans want. But I still feel that with a manager like him, you know, I think his future is in Italy. And he's still preferably young for a manager, 58 years old, as long as we're talking about that. I mean, it's still, I feel that he's not yet ready. You know, many people are, you know, he's still a bit, you know, a bit removed from the Bayern Munich sacking that he got early on. This season, it's really tough. I mean, I don't see it either. I think that his heart would be to stay in Italy and obviously manage a club, maybe Milan, depending on how Gattuso does, or some other club that he's never managed. Give him another challenge, but I just don't see him going to Arsenal.
Okay, next name, which I think this one, boy, if you're a betting man, this one might be the one to play, Rob, because this one, if it happens, smells like David Moyes in at United. And it's Mikel Arteta, the 36-year-old who's currently an assistant under Pep Guardiola at City, played at Arsenal for 5 years and is familiar with the system, is familiar with Wenger, familiar with the top brass. And he kind of fits in at that point because he's familiar, but he also, for me as a coach, I don't want to be the guy that took over for the girlfriend. You know what I mean? We've talked about this before, even with Pep when he went to Bayern for Jupankis. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be the next guy. And Arteta would be that guy. And it really fits that David Moyes mold in terms of that pattern of coming back to a club and that sort of thing. What do you think of Arteta?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit different considering Moyes had a lot of experience as a manager. You know, he was a manager for Everton for many years. Arteta, you know, took this job just a year or two years ago when Guardiola joined Manchester City. So it's definitely a really big challenge and certainly uncharted territory in terms of coaching. Obviously, he's familiar with the club. He's won titles there. He's obviously played there for 5 years. He's definitely not foreign to it at all, but it's still unfamiliar territory from a coaching standpoint. So I would understand why he could be the top favorite to really be that manager to succeed Arsene Wenger, but it just smells like a bad idea and maybe won't work well for this club.
I agree. The one that I think is probably going to be the winner of the competition, Luis Enrique, 8-1. I think there's serious consideration here, and I think Enrique would be good for the job. He brings in fresh ideas, good coach, and I think he might be a good option.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, the experience that he was able to get at Barcelona, you know, he knows how to manage superstars, or at least, you know, how to handle it. Perhaps the way that he ended his season last year wasn't at the best standards, but I still feel that, yeah, I mean, it's a good manager. You know, he has a respectable, I would say, just ideas of way to think. You know, he's won trophies at Barcelona, but now, and this is a huge challenge for him, something that we haven't seen in a long time. Obviously, he managed Roma before, he managed Celta before he went to Barcelona, but this is certainly a challenge, and I feel that, you know, maybe it's a good choice. I think a manager like Luis Enrique, you know, with his style of thinking and his way of formations and tactic, it seems like a good replacement. I feel like this one is the best realistic one, and also the one that many people would definitely feel comfortable for.
No doubt. The last ones, Rob, I'm just going to rip through because I don't know that there are any viable candidates in the last list, except for maybe one. I'll leave him last. Leo Jardim, 43. He's 16-1, the current Monaco head coach. Jurgen Klopp, the current German national team coach. He's 58. He doesn't fit the bill for me strictly because Arsenal's upper management said that they want a replacement in kind of immediately because of the short window, because of the World Cup. So I don't see Jurgen Klopp being that one, especially leaving immediately after World Cup and trying to get in on a transfer window. So that one doesn't make sense to me. Brendan Rodgers, you know, there's, I think he's a definite possibility, but I don't know that he's good enough for Arsenal. You know what I mean? That's just my personal opinion. Cholo Simeone that we just talked about. I don't think he wants that job. I really think that he's going to buy his time at Atletico until he can move over to Inter Milan. I really think that's his job, his dream job. And I think that the only job that he would take above the Inter job is the Argentinian national team, which could open up at the end of the summer. We'll have to see if that happens or not. The last one that's interesting, Rob, that I want to give to you, because I could also see this one happening, is Patrick Vieira, the current NYCFC head coach. He's at 6-1 on this list. And he's a former Arsenal midfielder. He, you know, Arsene Wenger knows him well. And if we feel like Wenger is going to stay in upper management in the club, I think there will be many eyes or long talks about Patrick Vieira before they finally make a decision on a coach.
It's certainly a really, you know, understandable decision of why they would go for a person like Patrick Vieira. Obviously, you know, infamous and famous for his time at Arsenal, and it's usually successful for it. But I just still feel that it's a bit removed yet. I still think that he has a plan at, you know, NYCFC, a really good plan given the start that they've been going through so far this season. I just don't feel that he's ready to move on that quickly yet to a top managing job like Arsenal. But certainly, there are going to be a lot of talks regarding who is going to be the next manager. And obviously, I think with a person like Patrick Vieira, that he's definitely going to be mentioned into it.
No doubt about it. So let's wrap up our opening thoughts on Arsene Wenger. Let's turn our focus to some of the other topics, and let's stick with the head coaching. And I want to talk about this. This came up this week in the Fenerbahce-Beşiktaş Turkish Cup semifinal matchup. The match was abandoned, Rob, after I want to say it was in the 58th minute when head coach Sinol Gunas, he's the head coach for Fenerbahce, was hit in the head with an object thrown from the stands, and the match was then abandoned. You can see pictures of Gunas with his head stapled shut, in some type of post-game conference. This is just a black eye, man. This, there's fans and then there's fanatics, and I don't know if there's any room in world football for fanatics.
No, definitely. He's the manager of Beşiktaş, by the way, Joe.
Thank you.
So, I mean, obviously, we obviously remember the stories of the owner who pulled out a gun, or I think it was a gun, in Greece. And so it's definitely not a good eye. And obviously, we understand the passionate support that Turkey has had, with big games such as the Fenerbahce and Beşiktaş or against Galatasaray or any of those type of clubs. We understand them, but this is certainly not going to be going on easily. It's definitely not going to be just left off there in plain sight. There's certainly going to be some sort of repercussions to it. We don't know what it could be. We don't know what FIFA will do. We don't know what the Turkish FA will do. But it's definitely something that I think should be kept into the stands and shouldn't really affect the players or the coaches or even the referees at this point.
No doubt about it. Let's focus on some better stuff, right, Rob? And we talked about this last week, and the vote was this week. Mohamed Salah winning the PFA Player of the Year award, edging out Kevin De Bruyne, which we all suspected was going to be the case. It was going to be either De Bruyne or Salah, and it was going to be very, very close. But Mohamed Salah, 33 appearances, 31 goals. He's on the verge of breaking the goal-scoring record in England, in the EPL. 9 assists for him. He's played 2,600 minutes, and he's been just the spark, edging out De Bruyne. Like I said, Rob, I want to ask you, we talked about the departure of Philippe Coutinho with Tim Vickery earlier tonight. Do you think that helped Mohamed Salah where he could become more of a focus for the offense? Or do you think that maybe even Mo Salah would be even further along than this with Coutinho feeding him the ball?
Well, given the season and then obviously I think the position that he plays in, him as a winger and obviously, looking to and is more of a player that tends to create more rather than score. This is a remarkable achievement. Mm. Obviously Ronaldo was one of the rare exceptions of a winger performing of that case, but he's a different story. He's a different player in its own. Obviously, the last two winners to have done it, or the last two players to have had that record, is Alan Shearer and Luis Suarez. Both of them were all in out number nines and strikers. So this is definitely a remarkable achievement for a player like Mohamed Salah, and definitely it was certainly a case of how Coutinho was able to really understand him and really help him at the start of the season. But when after he moved, I mean, my goodness, he just flourished beyond that and proved that maybe it wasn't just Coutinho that really made the difference. It was Mohamed Salah himself. It was players like, Mane helping him and Firmino helping him as well, but it was all Salah. I mean, he was able to score, he was able to create. That just shows the kind of importance of a player like him, and rightly so and deserves so, that debate of who should be the PFA Player of the Year, and given the records that he's broken and given the performances that he's been having for Liverpool, especially heading into this Champions League game tomorrow against Roma, it's well-deserved.
No doubt about it. And let's also couple that into the Ballon d'Or discussion. Sam Tai on Bleacher Report listed his top 15 finalists for the Ballon d'Or. Number 15, Giorgio Chiellini, Alisson Becker at Roma at 14, Sergio Ramos 13th, Marcelo 12th, David Silva 11th, Antoine Griezmann 10th, James Rodriguez 9th, who's had a great season. It was a great move for him to go to Bayern from Real Madrid. Robert Lewandowski at 8th, 7th is Edin Dzeko, number 6, Kevin De Bruyne. Now let's get into our top 5. Sadio Mane at Liverpool. Boy, Rob, let's rewind for 1 second. I can't see De Bruyne at 6 with Sadio Mane at 5. And although Mane has had a great season, how do you put Mane ahead of De Bruyne?
I think it's rightly so. It has to be the performances in the Champions League. I think just because of how Liverpool have been doing farming, and you know, look at number four. We'll be talking about in a second. Right. I think that just proves, you know, how this voting has really affected world football as a whole.
Right, but I mean, he's now, you know, in terms of this list, he's going to be fourth in terms of players in the EPL because number four is Roberto Firmino. I don't know where Sam's coming from. I mean, with the year City had, I get maybe he's weighing the Champions League a little heavier. In fact, I'm willing to bet that is the case given the top five the way they're set up.
Absolutely.
Firmino at four, and the reason I say that is because Lionel Messi's at number three with the season that he's having, and they're on their pace to win the double. Obviously, not going to hit the treble this year, but not many teams ever get to do that. Number two, Mo Salah, that we had talked about. So number one is Cristiano Ronaldo, which means that by Sam Tai's assessment, it's going to be much of the same, right? So, you know, to couple that back in with our EPL discussion, is Mo Salah a serious contender for the Ballon d'Or? Could we see somebody break the Messi-Ronaldo hold on this title?
It would have to take a big achievement, like winning the Champions League, to do that. Because, of course, let's be honest, if Messi or Ronaldo wins the World Cup, that's his. That's whoever wins that, that Ballon d'Or is going to be his, no matter what happens in the Champions League. Obviously, you know, if Ronaldo wins the Champions League and wins the World Cup, that just goes without saying. Ronaldo could win the Champions League, but Messi wins the World Cup. I think they're going to give it to Messi just because of that. But, you know, there could be the case of, you know, Neymar winning the World Cup with Brazil or Germany or France or you know, Egypt going far in the World Cup. That's definitely going to be an importance. And, of course, I think Salah could really contend for this title, you know, especially heading into, of course, I think the only way that he will get into this top three is if Liverpool do indeed win the Champions League. I just don't see anything else. I mean, obviously, it would have to be, depending on what happens in the World Cup, you know, they're still early on to really decide of a content top three. But I just feel that if Salah does win Liverpool the Champions League and does preferably well for Egypt, and assuming that Ronaldo or Messi does not win the World Cup, yeah, I think he's a serious contender. I mean, Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think he's up there. I don't know that he needs to win the Champions League. I think getting to the final will certainly help his cause, but could you imagine him getting to the final against Bayern Munich? Then I think yeah, he wins. I think he wins the Ballon d'Or. You know, it's entirely tough to say because that title is measured over over the year, not necessarily over this season. So you'll have to see what he does at the World Cup. You know, let's put it this way. Let's say he gets knocked out of the Champions League here now. But carries Egypt to a quarterfinal berth. Okay, now we're talking some serious, you know, decisions to make. I don't, you know, it all depends on what Ronaldo, what Messi do. Because I think if Messi wins the World Cup, he's going to win the Ballon d'Or too. I think the same goes for Cristiano Ronaldo. I think if they win the World Cup, they're taking home the Ballon d'Or. I don't think there's any argument either. So I think a great showing in the World Cup for Mo Salah would actually help his cause. I'll tell you, the way Kevin De Bruyne played this season, I think a huge run for Belgium, maybe to the final, I think could also warrant him some discussion in that Ballon d'Or talk.
But it would have to be his contributions to be leading over all of his teammates.
Of course.
I think that's the big factor of it.
Of course, 100%. It would have to be the contributions. It's not something where Belgium got there because it was Eden Hazard, so now we're talking about Kevin De Bruyne. It would be De Bruyne, you know, with 8 assists and 3 goals over 7 matches.
Right.
You know, something.
And a few goals as well, obviously.
Right, exactly. So I think that's where we would be. But let's spin off of the EPL and let's go back into Spain, Rob. Obviously, the Copa del Rey was this weekend with Barcelona just manhandling Sevilla 5-0. This game was over, Rob, 20 minutes in, I think. I think it was 2 or 3 nothing at that point, and it was easy sailing for Barca all the way through. And in that match, one, Andres Iniesta scored a goal, which many think that maybe that could have been his last goal in the competition. He's talked about moving on at this point, possibly moving on at the end of the year, maybe to MLS, maybe to China. There's been a lot of talk of that. But just reflecting on somebody who is truly won every trophy there is to win.
Yeah, certainly, you know, not just makes the case of being perhaps the greatest Spanish soccer player of all time, but, you know, it could be one of the greatest athletes to come from Spain. I mean, he's, you know, and that's a remark, and that's a big argument and a big say to say such a thing, you know, for a player that's only 5'7", you know, and really has revolutionized, I would say, the midfield position, really becoming the that top midfielder of this generation. I would certainly think so, Joe. I mean, yeah. I feel that he is the greatest midfielder of this generation. You know, many people want to put him up to the plaudits of Pirlo. You know, many people want to argue, I don't know, a player like, can't think of one straight out of my mind. Xavi. Yeah, Xavi. Obviously, that's another name. Sure. But yeah, I mean, I can't make a big argument of regarding his success. I mean, he's the most decorated player of all time, 34 trophies, going to be probably 35, heading into perhaps winning La Liga next week. And you have to remember, Joe, I think the big move is going to be China. I mean, he's still one of the top players in the world. Even if he doesn't score, he's certainly a big influence for this team, and he's only 33. Certainly not by any cases that old, but certainly already at the twilight of his career.
No doubt about it. But we'll see where he makes that move. He could go for bigger money in China. You know, obviously, no matter where he goes, if he goes, you know, because this is also somebody that could just say, you know what, hang up the boots. You could easily,
and we wouldn't be entirely surprised either because of that. But no, because he's already done everything. He's done everything
exactly. So we'll have to keep an eye on it. But you know, just consider ourselves blessed that we got to see someone like Andres Iniesta play, you know, in this day and age. Is just
let me ask you this, Joe, and this is obviously a big question. Is he the best midfielder of this generation, or maybe of this decade, I would say?
Decade, possibly. Even this generation, possibly. I I'm going to be partial to Andrea Pirlo. And when you look at it, Andrea Pirlo's won everything as well, right? So, you know, he's won the titles in Italy. He's won the Champions League. He's won the World Cup. So
never won a Euro, though, but that's a different thing.
Oh, I thought he did. Oh, no, you're right. He did not win the Euro. But otherwise, you know, the same thing. I don't know. Sometimes I think creativity-wise, I think Pirlo was a little better. Not much, but they're very, very close. I think those are the two debatables for me. Is Iniesta or Pirlo? I think, you know, and again, when we have the Messi or Ronaldo talk, it's kind of the same idea. Which piece of gold do you want? Do you want this piece of gold or this piece of gold?
You're going to be content either way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's put it this way. You would start your team with one of them, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so. But hey, I mean, obviously the big news, if he does go to China, it's good for his wine business. I'm sure you're happy for that.
I did see that. What is it, like a million cases or something like that?
Yes, something like that. Hey, maybe he needs someone to help him drink all that.
I can try. So let's move to wine country. All right. Let's go to Italy and talk about the Juve-Napoli game from this weekend. Obviously, Napoli 1-0 winners with a Kalidou Koulibaly header in the 90th minute, which has really turned the Serie A race on its ear. You've got a situation where Max Allegri's job now is in question because of the result. You mentioned it earlier. You're looking at a situation where Juve just a little over a week ago or 2 weeks ago was in line to win a treble, and now we're talking about them not winning anything. I'd like to remind all the Napolitans that Juve is still in first place. Okay. I want to make sure they understand it. But Rob, Dybala was subbed off at the half. I mean, he was awful. He was really bad.
And we talked about it. We talked about how he really needed a big game for this, and he fell flat on his face.
Completely. Here's the thing. Juve only managed one shot, none on goal, 40% possession. You can't win. I don't care. If Juve was playing Benevento this weekend and they turned out that statistical performance, they would have lost to Benevento too. They would have lost to everybody.
No, absolutely.
And the way they were packed in and just in that defensive shell the whole time was ridiculous. They let Napoli dictate play. There were a couple moments where they started to dictate, you know, they started to enforce themselves. I mean, you're at the J Stadium, man. You're home. This is your hallowed ground. You can't let Napoli run all over you. And they did. They did. And whether they let Napoli run all over them or Napoli just went and did it because that was their passion for the day, either way, that was the end result. And Juve is certainly in a really, really tough spot. They've got the Derby della Mole coming up this weekend against Inter. I'm sorry, not the Derby. Derby d'Italia is this weekend against Inter. The Della Mola is against Torino. But they've got that Derby coming up. They've got Roma still to come. They've got a hell of a path, man. And they've really got to take, I think, safely 10 of the next 12 points or the last 12 points. They have to take those 10 of the 12.
Let me ask you this, and obviously we'll talk about this much more. Mm-hmm. You know, if Juve fail to get a result, and I mean a win, or maybe even, you know, even if they draw this game, you think this is Napoli Scudetto?
Well, it depends. Napoli doesn't exactly have an easy path either. They have Fiorentina, and they have one other, and I think they're both road games. There's another big team that they have in there.
Yeah, I'll read the matches real quick. Napoli at Fiorentina away, definitely a hard game. Yeah. They are home against Torino, away to Sampdoria, obviously another hard game, and then they finish it up against Crotone. Compare that to Juventus. You know, they have Inter over there, the San Siro. You know, they have to play Bologna at home. They have to go to Rome to play Roma, and then they finish it up with Hellas. Certainly harder, I would say, and I don't want to go stereotypical, but certainly a harder schedule for Juve, don't you think, Joe?
Well, you know, the thing is that Juve's schedule is balanced. Good team, bad team, good team, bad team. You know, after Inter, they can beat up on Bologna. After Roma, they can beat up on Crotone. So, I'm sorry, against Hellas. So they have a, I would say, a balanced schedule where it's a good, bad, good, bad. But that also could be dangerous because they could look ahead and slip on the banana skin, you know, at Bologna or something like that. Napoli's road is a little tougher because they're going to have to go to Samp. They have to go to Fiorentina. What was the other team that was in the middle there? That was the third one.
Torino.
Torino at home is going to be tough because, you know, that's a pretty quick team to play. And then obviously Crotone is the layup at the end of the season, which will already be relegated. So, you know, I think the highs are higher for Juve in terms of the quality of teams they're playing. Inter, Roma, those are difficult fixtures, whereas the bar is a little lower for Napoli. I think probably given Fiorentina's kind of fallen off the pace a little bit here in the past couple matches, I think that Samp game is going to be the one that Juve is going to sit there and, you know, go to church the night before and pray. I think that's what you're going to get there. But I, you know, the problem is that Napoli have three tough games in a row, where Juve has a tough and easy, a tough and an easy, so they can kind of focus on those other matches and keep some players healthy. Now, I think someone like Dybala is going to have to get really fat and healthy off of Bologna. You know, you're going to need to see him regain some of that confidence he had at the beginning of the season where, you know, he was scoring goals left and right. I think a team like Bologna offers that opportunity for him, but he's got to take advantage. And he totally did not take advantage this weekend against Napoli, where he should have. This was his moment to shine, where you literally put out a goal and an assist performance. You win 2-0 against Napoli, and you basically look at Sampaoli and say, now you really have to look at me, okay? Because I won the Scudetto today. That was his opportunity, and he totally lost the plot.
And now I think heading into this game, I think we're looking, obviously we don't want to talk about Argentina much further, but now this is a big game for both these men, both him and Icardi.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because now if either of them want to make a display, you've got to imagine Sampaoli is going to be watching from somewhere. You know, there's going to be Higuain, there's going to be Icardi, there's going to be Dybala. There's plenty of Argentine players on this pitch that he needs to see. So he's going to have to, you know, these guys are all going to be under the spotlight this weekend. And we'll have to see if any of them step up. If Icardi steps up, Juve is in a world of trouble. And that's, you know, plain and simple. That one's easy. So they're going to have to get through this hump. They're going to have to be decisive against Inter and really show their fans, show the Juventini that they are who they are. They are the champions. They are the Italian champions. They're six-time defending champions. They're going to have to really display that. And you've got to also remember that Juve have a tough road because they've also got the Coppa Italia final mixed in the middle against AC Milan. So there is still hardware out there to be won aside from the Scudetto. So it's going to be interesting to see how Max Allegri balances the schedule and balances his players and motivates them for these last five matches of the season.
Definitely. And I have to say, Joe, one last thing. I mean, what a hell of a season.
Yeah.
What a hell of a season, Serie A.
We said it was going to go down to the wire, you know, what, like November, October, November?
Before that, even. Yeah. I think when we did our preview back in August, I think we've said that it was going to be really tough.
And here we are. All the other leagues are done and dusted for the most part. I mean, Barca hasn't officially been crowned yet, but they're close enough.
Right.
This is it, man. This is the race, no doubt about it.
This is the race.
Let's do Copa Lib this week, Rob. Any you know, now they get back into a full schedule. I think we only had one match last week, correct?
Yeah, we did. It was the No, we had a couple matches.
We did.
We had a couple matches. That was the other week. We had a couple matches.
All right. So so obviously they get back into it this week. I guess we'll leave the matches when I announce them here in a minute. Just looking at the groups real quick, obviously Cerro Porteño picking up that draw against Gremio that we talked about previously. They're kind of in charge in that group. They're 3 points ahead of Defensor. I don't see them losing that shot, Rob. So I think your boys are going to be moving on to the knockout stages, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they're able to get a win at Gremio over there in Brazil, I think that will definitely put them in a really good spot, because if they win, that puts them at what, like 5 points ahead of Gremio? I think they'll win that group.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The other one that's interesting, Rob, that I was looking through the tables here is another Paraguayan team, Libertad. In Group C, they're perfect, 3-0, 7 goals for, 1 goal against, 9 points. They're 6 points ahead of second place. We can put them in, right? We might as well just move them along to the...
It's definitely early, and I think looking at the other teams that have already lost 2 games, both of them already lost, you know, a 6-point lead. Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, many people didn't expect Libertad to be in the position that they were in, you know, considering that they have removed the player, Jesus Medina, who has been phenomenal for NYCFC so far this season. Mm-hmm. It's certainly surprising, but it's definitely a remarkable achievement. And I think that they could really surprise a few heading into this into the Libertadores group stage. They did make the semifinals of the Sudamericana last year. So, yeah, I mean, they're in a really good spot. And you know, I think they have to just continue to be consistent heading into these next few games to close out their group, and then face the big boys of the other, I guess, nations heading into the knockout stage.
Right. And then the last one that I wanted to bring up, the best defensive team in the Copa Libertadores so far, Corinthians in Group G have not conceded a goal yet. They are 2 wins and a draw. So the only true unblemished side in this competition so far is Libertad.
That's right.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. And we've got some matches coming up this week that we'll talk about in a minute. Last thing I want to talk about is the CONCACAF Champions League. The second leg of the semifinals is this week. And we saw in the first leg, we saw a 2-1 victory for Chivas in a snow cold, kind of a lousy pitch, you know, up in Toronto. But, you know, given the second leg, there's a couple of interesting factoids that I saw. One, that an Asian referee, a referee from the AFC is going to be coming in and reffing the second leg. Rob, I like this. I'm a big fan.
I do as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is, for me, this is the way it should be. I think the Champions League should maybe draw a South American ref or an African ref. I think this is good because it removes any type of bias that could possibly exist on the referee side, or the impression of it. I mean, I know they're supposed to go in neutral and arbitrary, but you know, sometimes you just don't feel like that happens. So I really do like this. The Asian Football Federation has sent Ravshan Ermatov, who is a 5-time AFC Referee of the Year. He's the youngest ref ever to whistle a FIFA World Cup opening match in South Africa of 2010. He did that. The ref from Uzbekistan is going to be the man with the whistle tomorrow night in the second leg. Rob, what do you think? You think Toronto can reverse the 2-1? I mean, that's a pretty tough mountain to climb, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, and obviously we don't want to go over dramatic or anything, but definitely, you know, following the tragedy that happened in Toronto just a couple of hours before we went on air,
sure.
I think that just gives them even much more motivation to help the city win this tournament. But, you know, taking that out aside, I still feel that Chivas are in a really good position. 2 away goals in Toronto really put yeah, they have away goals, correct?
Yes, they do. Yep, away goals.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah, I mean, they're in a really good position heading into this game in what will be a tough, tough game over there in Guadalajara.
Yep.
I mean, it would have to take – I mean, obviously, if Toronto do score a goal early on, then the series is tied because – or actually, no.
No,
because – Chivas. No, Chivas, yeah, so they would have to score at least 2, because even if Chivas do score, you know, that's still gonna be more to the advantage of Chivas heading into this game. But yeah, this is definitely Chivas' CONCACAF Champions League to lose, essentially.
But TFC is definitely capable of scoring two goals and scoring two goals quickly. Yeah. So I think that this one is not over by any stretch of the imagination. Interesting story that came out from Tom Marshall at ESPN FC is that the Chivas players are protesting the club directors before the second leg of this tournament because they have apparently it's been a wage thing. Where they're not, if I remember correctly, and I read it the other day, there's been a lack of bonus payments and communication with the directors, travel logistics, and even nutrition, just their meal plans and stuff like that. So, you know, when you have a sour team, normally they play for the badge, normally they play for themselves, but this is the kind of thing that could prove to be just enough of a distraction where TFC could take advantage.
And rightly so, in such a pivotal moment like a second leg in a final, that just perfect. That's just the worst timing to have.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. So let's look at the matches to look at this week, Rob. Again, tomorrow we have the big one in the Champions League, which is Liverpool Roma at 2:45 p.m. These are all Eastern time. Atletico Nacional Bolivar in the Copa Libertadores at 8:30, and Santos Estudiantes is also going to be a good one at 8:30 tomorrow night as well. On Wednesday, Bayern Munich Real Madrid 2:45. Then Boca Juniors Palmeiras. That is probably, in terms of Copa Lib, is probably going to be the best match to watch this week, I think. That one's going to be at 8:45, and then Chivas Toronto FC, like we talked about, the CONCACAF Champions League final, 9:30 p.m. On Thursday, we have a couple of Europa League matches. We have Arsenal Atletico Madrid at 3:05, and Marseille Salzburg at 3:05 as well. Then you can close that out with Libertad as they take on Peñarol, and they can actually lock up that Group C with the victory there in the Copa Libertadores. On Saturday, the Derby d'Italia, Inter-Juventus, 2:45 p.m., and that one's going to go a long way because on Sunday we have the Napoli-Fiorentina match at noon, also coupled with the Man United-Arsenal matchup coming up at 11:30 at Old Trafford. So those are your matches to watch this week. Rob, let me give you the trivia question again.
Before we do that, do you want to maybe predict the Champions League and Europa League games? I mean, obviously they're semifinals, and I think they're important to recognize.
You want to do the game or the tie?
Let's go for the tie. Yeah, let's go. I mean, come on. We've been wrong before, so it wouldn't be much different. Exactly.
All right, so I'm thinking, you know, it does concern me with the ability for Roma to keep up with the speed that Liverpool presents. But Alisson Becker has been an incredible keeper all season long, one of the top five goalies in the world. And I think Roma edge it out. They're flying very, very high right now, especially with the comeback against Barcelona. And maybe a little bit of this is speaking with my Italian heart. I'm certainly not a Roma supporter by any stretch of the imagination. But I think in the end, I think Roma just barely edged this out. I could see maybe a draw tomorrow, a 1-1 or a 2-2. But a 2-2 would be a huge favorite for Roma getting two away goals. So I'm going to take Roma to move on to the Champions League final, and I'm going to take them against Bayern Munich. I really think Real Madrid has been living on borrowed time, and for me, Bayern this year has really been the most complete team. They can do it everything, and the resurgence of James Rodriguez that we talked about earlier has been nothing but a blessing to them, and I think James has something to prove against his old team as well. So I think I'm looking at a Roma-Bayern final. I think the Bayern matchup tomorrow, I'm sorry, Wednesday, probably goes something like 2-1 Bayern. And then maybe we see like a 1-1 draw back at the Santiago Bernabeu in the week after. But that's what I'm going with. I'm going with Bayern-Roma. How about you?
I'm an enormous fan of Mohamed Salah. I think the achievement that Liverpool has been able to do this season has been remarkable, just the way that they were able to really break down that seemingly impossibly beaten team like Manchester City. Obviously, they did beat them in the Premier League just months before. But I'm still convinced that this team just has something that maybe the other teams don't have. I am very impressed by Roma. Of course, we can't really take out the plaudits that Alisson Becker has had in goal. You know, the consistency of Edin Dzeko, that they've been really a team that has surprised a lot of people this season, and remarkably so. But I still feel that I'm going to have to say the same thing of what you've said, Joe, only in the different factor. I think Liverpool have to edge it out really closely. Obviously, I think Roma have the advantage, having to play the second leg at home. It would have to be a big game for Liverpool, and I'm talking about maybe a 2-0 or a 3-0. If they do concede a goal there, I feel that Roma have that more to their advantage heading into the second leg. But for me, I just think that Liverpool edge it out in this one. But in the Bayern Real Madrid game, you want to talk about the inconsistency that Real Madrid has had all season. You know, that really, you know, it was a team that, you know, was without a message. You know, Zidane was criticized, Ronaldo was criticized, among anything. But, you know, this Bayern Munich side is really, really strong. You know, I think they finally found what they've been able to play for under Jupp Heynckes. You know, James Rodriguez, you mentioned, is someone that's really been flourishing, and what a way to do it and hopefully score against his old club over there in the Bernabeu or even at the Allianz Arena. But this Real Madrid side is known for these types of games. You know, they are the two-time defending European champions. You know, we've said it before, I think with an athlete and a player like Cristiano Ronaldo, that these types of games are his games to decide, and he's really that type of player to really dictate this team and really move forward as that dominant player that he is. So I'm going to have to be the contrarian of what you said. You said a Roma-Bayern Munich final. I'm going to go for a Liverpool-Real Madrid final in Kiev in May.
Totally contrary to me. So I guess we'll see. Maybe at best we'll get it half right, you and I.
But yeah, exactly.
Which halves. So. All right, so the trivia question was, with the Copa del Rey final this weekend, Vincenzo Montella was the third Italian coach to coach in a Copa del Rey final. Also, I believe he's the first one to lose it, by the way, in my research. Can you name the other two Italian coaches and the teams that they coached?
So the one obvious one that came up to me and is a manager that we talked about recently as possible replacements for Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, and that's Carlo Ancelotti at Real Madrid, and I want to say 2013-2014
season. That's correct. Carlo Ancelotti won the Copa del Rey with Real Madrid. Can you name the other coach?
Yeah, no, that's the hard one. I'm trying to think of Italian coaches that actually managed in Spain in general. It's not Fabio Capello, is it?
It is not Fabio Capello.
Okay, yeah, that's the one thing. That's the one name I'm thinking of.
And if I gave you a hint, you would get it right off the bat.
Like the club?
No, the nickname of the coach.
Nickname.
You're almost there.
No, I have no idea. I'm sorry.
The Tinkerer.
Ranieri. Ah, yeah, Valencia.
Valencia, 98-99. Claudio Ranieri won the title with Valencia.
So, I was thinking him. I'm thinking, I was like, wait, he's never managed a big club. That's one of the Copa del Rey, has he? I was like, okay, all right.
Valencia.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's your answer. And that was according to the broadcast at ESPN this weekend for the Copa del Rey. Vincenzo Montella obviously losing this weekend with Sevilla to Barcelona. Carlo Ancelotti 2013-2014 with Real Madrid. And Claudio Ranieri 1998-1999 with Valencia, your Italian managers in the Copa del Rey final.
That's a good question.
Yeah. You know, I've got another one for 2 weeks, but it's your honor next week. So with all that in the books, Rob, should we hit the closing music?
Sounds good.
All right, let's wrap up number 200, man. And hopefully we'll have 200 more, I guess, right? Or something like that. So
hopefully.
So let me do this here quickly for episode 200 of Low Limit Football. Special thanks again to Tim Vickery for joining us tonight. Next week, we will go back and recap the Champions League. We'll look at the finals of the CONCACAF Champions League and many, many other things. So for episode 200 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.